Hey, hi. Toasties!
Hi.
It's Brian here.
Hi.
And Zona.
Hi, hi.
From BZ Furfur.
And
we are here for season 3, episode 7 of your favorite wood burning, pyrography, small business podcast. And today's topic is finding your voice. And we searched far and wide to find somebody who has a voice that is worth discussion, and we have discovered the lovely Haley from Haley, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Haley Russell. I go by Wisp and Mallet. That is a reference to Wisp, a reference to the wood burning, of course, because I love the little smoke wispies. The mallet part is the metal stamping that I do kind of alongside. So it's kind of a dual venture, although I definitely feel like I focus a lot more on the wood burning than anything else.
You know, I never knew that the mallet portion was because of that was the reason why. I don't know if I've ever seen your engravings, or what did you say, stamping?
Stamping, yeah.
I don't know if I've ever seen your stamping.
You're such a liar. I bought a bracelet from her and I showed it to you.
If it wasn't in the last 3 weeks, I hold no responsibility for what's in my memory.
That's true. We'll can't confirm.
what we will do is we will post pictures of some of Haley's stamping in the Discord server. So that everybody can see the mallet portion of Wisp and Mallet that I was but also wasn't aware of, not of anybody's doing but my own. All right, Haley. So do continue. I'm sorry. How did you get into wood burning?
Gosh. Okay. So it can be a little bit convoluted. I started learning the Irish language. Signed up for a class that got moved online pretty quickly because it happened right at the beginning of the COVID stay-at-home orders. So I was working on that and finding these cool words that I really loved and found inspirational and just thought they were just, I don't know, so beautiful and unique. And I was looking for tactile ways to reinforce some of these vocabulary words that I was coming across because flashcards were boring. I had these little, you know, I was always going to Michael's getting crafty stuff. I was getting a little bit into making jewelry. And so I picked up some metal stamping things. I was like, I'll make some bracelets. And then I think I found these just like little wooden pendant things. And I was like, maybe I can do something with these too. I don't know. And those kind of the wood pendants sat around for a while. And then a couple of months later, my oldest son was turning 10 and we had a neighbor who wanted to porch drop him a birthday gift. And so they had gotten somewhere just a super basic wood burning tool. It might've been like the VersaTool from, Walnut Hollow. And he was like very grateful and then just never used it because I don't know, just wasn't his
10 year old boys.
So I don't know, it sat around and sat around. And then a few months later, I was just like, I'm sitting around the house a lot still. I'm just going to make everybody's Christmas gifts this year. I'm going to get a bunch of wood stuff from Michael's, right? And then I asked my son, I was like, hey, can I use your wood burning pen and just like put some stuff on here? He's like, Mom, you can just have it. So I just, I don't know, made a bunch of like random gifts, you know, trinket boxes. And there was a lot of trinket boxes with just stuff either written on, it is a lot of words, right? At least to start with, and just like made everybody's Christmas gifts that year. And that was kind of the beginning of it. So
it seems like the origin stories of most people in this craft start with, I go to Michael's a lot and I get stuff. Or I needed to make a bunch of Christmas gifts. So I feel like your origin story is the coalition of those two origin stories combined into one.
I mean, that's pretty legit. I think that's pretty much the origin story of most people. It's, oh, hey, I was in some craft store and there was this thing. And I decided, oh, hey, I'm gonna try this thing because I don't know 25 crafts. I think I need to learn a new one to add to my growing list of things that I know that, I just have to add on to. We collect hobbies that we know a gazillion things of because we, of course, we have like an unlimited supply of space.
And money.
And money. And things floating around in our head, So we're like, oh, let's just add one more thing onto it. Oh, that sounds like something cool to try.
So what made you, like, of all the different crafts that you were doing, what made you stick with these two in particular?
Well, wood burning was the most sensorially pleasing, the smell, the touching the wood. I just loved how much it engaged multiple senses. That's what really sucked me in about the wood burning. Metal stamping is like to almost totally different. It's very noisy. You're hammering things. It's very easy to, if you slip while you're stamping and you make a gouge in your metal, there's no coming back from that. You have
Much
to be
like when
really careful with.
you're burning wood and you
It's pretty
overburn
hard
it
to come
for
back from
minutes.
that too, depending on how hot and how deep you've gone into the wood.
Well,
You
I
might be
mean,
able to sand it out, but
you might be able to sand it out, you might be able to hide it. It depends. I mean, there's caveats, right? I mean,
right. Yeah, but there's no margin of error in metal stamping.
you just have to own
Zero.
it or
Yeah,
start over.
yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've thrown away a lot of blanks that I've messed up. Like, it's always a little sad. It's like, oh, well, that was some money down the drain,
I
but
mean, you turn those into practice. Ooh, hey, what does this look like? Right? You turn those into to the practice pieces, right?
yeah, you
That's
just
what I
reuse
do.
them over and over again to test out
I
different
mean,
techniques.
I use those into the, ooh, let me test the heat on this real quick. I turn those into the, what does this paint look like? What does this burn? Is this too hot? If I do this with this nib, what is it? What will it look like? The practice piece. That's what I turn those oopsies.
Right.
That's what I turn those into.
Provided it's not a 4 foot by 4 foot chunk of wood that you spent 80 hours on.
There is no way. See what I'll do on the oopsies is that, or even the pieces that like I do for social media. Like I'll do with the front. I'll do for social media, and I have no intention of like selling or whatever. I do it for I'll put it in like I'll flip it over and use the back for practice. I just flip those over because those are usually ornaments that are like 3 inches. Flip. I'm not flipping over a 4 foot piece. That's just not happening. There's no way I'm flipping over a 4 foot piece to test on the back. That's just not happening. It's just not happening. That piece is like 20 pounds, and do you know? He doesn't even know this.
Oh no.
And I stood there for like 5 minutes staring at it.
Also,
And like just horrified and just crying and just inside and stop
stop covering your mouth while you're
what?
talking. Shut up because she can still hear me. And just internally just dying, just
Was it messed up?
no, thank God, because
Ah.
haha. What ha happened was
You had me on the edge of my seat,
because
Zona.
what happened was I had it in the easel. So I had what I discovered with the easel is because it's very, very large, but what I discovered is that if I have it laying down flat and I almost kind of sort of disassemble parts of it, with an easel it has that bottom piece that it the wood or the canvas actually sits on, and then there's the top piece that like kind of holds it in place. Well, it's mine, not my fault your face is in my way. If I take the way that the easel works, this particular easel is that it has the two pieces on the side that it slides in. If I disassemble it and I take the top brace and the bottom brace, if I slide it out, if it's laying flat, it just lays flat and it's great, it's fine. But I wanted to lean it up, so I have to reassemble it. But there's a turn. Like a what is it? Not a bolt. Well, it's kind of like a bolt, a turn bolt. Well, I forgot to put the bolt in. So when I tilted it up, the whole thing just like slid. But it was clamped in, and because it was clamped in, the bottom part has this it has a piece on the very bottom. So when it slid down, it almost like buffered it. So there's a gouge in my floor.
That I wasn't
Oh.
aware of.
That's fine. You can't see it. See, you didn't even know. You didn't even know it was
Well, I
there.
don't
It's
know
like, oh,
what's
shit.
going on that side of the
That's
house right
fine.
now.
That's
The
fine. Yeah,
entire
that's
house
fine.
is
It's not
now
the
occupied by.
house. It's the other side of the dining room table. But see that he doesn't mind because I'm still sitting there. But there's like this, it's not that big. I'm making it sound like, oh, a lot worse, but it's like a 2-inch tiny square, maybe. We have to get the floors redone anyway. But there's like a little gouge from the bottom of the easel. But I swear to God, like when it slid and I was trying to catch it, and I didn't catch it, and it went boof, I was like,
This was the wood I had to drive
yes.
halfway across the country to get.
Yes. He drove up to Pennsylvania to get it for me.
Oh,
I picked
wow.
it up Well, he didn't drive up. Well, it was on the way back to
I was
Jaime.
up that way anyway.
He
I
was
picked it
in
up from David and
Pennsylvania.
Renee.
Yes. He was in Pennsylvania anyway, but he made a stop specifically to go get it, and I was just like, oh. I just had visions of I'm about 75% through, and there was going to be this crack, and oh my God, how am I going to fix this? And oh my God, I'm done. And oh my God, I'm going to die. And
At that point, it just becomes part of the artwork.
no, there would be no, I don't know if there would have been a way for me to even hide if it split. I don't even know if there's any way for me to like work a split into this piece. I mean, the theme is transformation. I don't know how to work transformation into this.
Well, it transformationed into a big crack. I know you do a lot of realistic, like, faces. You do a lot of things that seem to be inspired by other art forms, by other cultures. What would you say kind of inspires your work?
Putting out in like, oh gosh, the branding and my written materials, captions, you name it, that I kind of have like zeroed in on in the last like year or so was a big driving force for me has always been language. And that's something that's like started really early on. Like I did not see the visual arts coming for me at all. I was a big reader. I thought I'd like do some writing or something. Maybe, be in the publishing world at some point. And it's just not the way it worked out. It's like the thing that got me started with this was like trying to learn a language. I love stories. I love mythology, right? A lot of that is all like oral traditions and things that have been written down. Song lyrics are another big thing. So let's just words. I love words. And it's only been kind of like in the last handful of years that my brain has finally been like, let's turn those into pictures. Word language is a big thing.
I love the idea of song lyrics inspiring, like art inspiring art. I
Yeah.
think that's like super cool. Literature inspiring art. We had Chuck on a couple of episodes ago, and he was talking about being, I think it was Poe's work that he was inspired by, and he actually took like was looking through, I think he was used like looking at pictures of Poe's old typewriter and trying to look at the typesetting on it and stuff like that to use that to kind of inspire his work. What music inspires your work?
Oh, okay. Well, if you follow me online at all, you're gonna figure out pretty fast that I'm like a huge Florence and the Machine fan. Her
Didn't you just go see her?
songs are just so, like, her lyric writing is incredibly evocative. She, I don't know, her turn of phrase is just not like anything that I've ever heard anybody put out in the world before. I did. That was a belated birthday gift for me as I got to go up to Chicago to see her play there, and it was every bit as cathartic and a spiritual experience that I was expecting it to be. It
She's got an amazing voice.
beyond even. It was amazing. I vibe on her female empowerment slash struggle. That kind of thing. Those are some pretty big recurring themes in my work too.
Yeah, I think of what you say vibing on it, and I know that's like with our culture now, but I think that it really like it resonates with a lot of people because I do feel as if when you're creating something and you're using something else as inspiration, like for me personally, if I'm creating something and I'm using music as inspiration, I'll listen to that music. And then it'll inspire me to do something, and then I'll do something, and then sometimes I have to come back to the song, or sometimes I have to come back to their broader, like the artist's broader catalog, or look at other things that were inspired by that, and you kind of draw these inspirations from all of these different things, and it kind of telescopes out into all of this. And then you've got to kind of tie it all back together. But it's a really, I think it's an amazing experience to be able to leverage the creations of other people, whether that's their artwork, their literature, their music, their whatever it is that inspires you, to being able to take that and be able to use that to kind of amplify your own voice.
Yeah.
Super cool.
I mean, it's interesting. I always thought that the wisp, I keep thinking about the wisp and the willows. And I always thought for some reason that the wisp in Wisp and Mallet came from wisp and willows. The Celtic
Yeah, they're
The
like
Will o' the
fairies, right?
Wisps?
Yeah.
Yes, the Will o' the Wisps.
That's what I meant. And I
Fairies
always
are
thought that
trying to
that's what
kill you.
it came from. Really? Were they supposed to?
You have to be really careful because if you start following them, they'll lead you right out into a bog where you drown.
Oh, really? Is that what that is that what
I mean,
that
that is a version. Now, if you're,
That's
watching
why
a
you bring a
Disney
mallet.
movie,
Oh, Jesus.
knock them away. If you're watching Brave by Disney, then they're leading you to your destiny. But so, I mean,
Well, yeah, Disney likes to Disney-fy things.
Disney. Oh, that's interesting. I
I like a
never.
darker turn to a story.
Well, that's true. No, but I
Sometimes.
always thought that that's what the wisp thing
Credit where
was.
credit is due, though. Brave is an excellent movie.
It is. I
Yeah.
mean.
I think
Talk
there's
about women empowerment,
well
right?
that,
Well,
and I mean I think you're a you were saying that you were learning to speak Irish or write in Irish, and I mean that is the de facto Irish Scottish, right? I mean, she was Scottish, wasn't she?
technically it's Scotland, although there's a whole lot of crossover there. The languages are almost, I mean, they're not entirely identical, but there's Like, if I come across in the Scottish Gaelic, I can usually make it out.
Good, because when my father talks to me, when his Scottish brogue comes out, I can't understand what the heck he's
No,
talking about.
I'm what I meant was like when I read it, but
Who
you
knows
know.
what he's talking about? He sounds like, did you ever see
I have no idea.
Snatch?
I saw your latest piece, Persephone and Cerberus.
Yeah.
Oh, that was nice.
Thank you. I'm really,
I
really pleased with that.
love that piece. I love your work. In general, I love your work. I
Thank you.
love the way that you bring your pieces to life. Like I guess that's really what I wanted to ask you about. Like just how? Like what when you think of a piece, like how did you bring that piece to life? Like when you were thinking about it. I know you put it a little bit in Instagram and like a little bit of your thought process on how you brought that piece to life, but like there's so much more to a piece than what you put in a caption. There's so much more to it than what you can actually put into, was it 500 words or whatever, how
Oh,
many words you put into that, right? Like, what made you think, you know what, Persephone, need the
yeah.
bodyguard? Oh, I know, Cerberus.
Yeah.
Three-headed dog. That seems like, and oh, you know what? I'm gonna make that into a picture. And you know what? I think I'm gonna make him look like this. That seems like a thing I'm gonna do. Like, you know, like, and then you said, okay, what am I gonna put it on? I'm gonna put it on this. And ooh, this. This is the piece I'm making. Like, what made you decide? On like what brought that whole thing together, like what
Yeah.
because like that is a really good composition of
Thank you. Yeah, that one was, I mean, that one percolated for a long time. So at the end of 2025, I got the chance to be featured at the gallery co-op that I'm a part of in Indianapolis. So I had to put together a show around a theme. And it's always, it can be as loose as you want it to be. And so I went with the theme of guardians. And so I like to work from lists when I'm like brainstorming, putting together ideas and stuff. Like I have a running list in my notes app on my phone of just like, hey, I think this would be a fun thing to burn, or I'll come across a story either in a book or on a podcast or something like that, or just an idea will pop in my head, put it in the notes app. So I'd come up with a few ideas. I think I ended up having about 10 pieces in that show. Some of it I pulled in some work that was already existing, but I think I got 5 new pieces made for that show. But I did not get all the things that I wanted, that I had, that I really wanted to do. Didn't get them done in time. So, how I came up with the idea, it's just like guardians. I was just, step one was like, think of all the figures that you can, right? And I was trying to come at it from about 3 different angles that I really pegged. So, like, mythology is a big one, right? So I was like, look for guardians in myth. Look for guardians. I wanted to do more of a like an urban legendy kind of thing, folklore. So there was that, and then just natural world, right? I like to pull in stuff from nature too, as do many.
If you're ever looking for inspiration, Zona has taught me about a lot of the Filipino folklore, and there is a lot of very interesting, sometimes very dark folklore associated with the Philippines. Definitely worth looking into. There's a lot of
Yeah.
art that's inspired by it too, which is super cool. So if you're ever looking for something like from other cultures that you kind of want to incorporate it into your work, that's a good place to look.
I wanna. I've been marinating on a Filipino mythology, kind
What
of.
was the one that you were telling me about?
I don't know. I've told you about so many. You need to be a little bit more
It sounds like a
specific.
vampire type of thing. And we were watching a cartoon based on it. I have to look it up.
Anyway, continue, please.
Yeah.
I'm really curious. I really want to know how you got to.
Yeah.
How you got to.
So, most of my myth pieces come from, Celtic lore, and I was like, yeah, let's go to like Greek mythology, right? There's stuff there that you haven't tapped yet. So, and I was thinking about, Cerberus is like the first thing that came to mind because underworld guardian, right? And it's always so vicious and scary and fighting with Hercules, and I don't remember how I came to start thinking about like, well, so much of my mindset and my work is like looking from like a woman's point of view, right? And so at some point it was like, well, how would he be with Persephone? I think I already had even well before I was planning for Guardians. I think I had Persephone on my list, like way back in there somewhere. Like, no, I think she'd be an interesting character to play with. So at some point, my brain was like, "Well, maybe let's put them together." And what would that be like? Maybe having, a feminine presence would bring out like his softer side. Maybe he would feel a little bit protective. Maybe he's doing more like, because really, like, what are you guarding the underworld from? Like, I think it's supposed to be mortals getting in, right? Like, I got to keep the mortals out. But like, why? Why is that a big deal? Oh, maybe he's protecting the lady of the house. I don't know. Yeah, so I think I just started playing with that idea. The way I ended up composing the piece, as it is, was like pretty different from what I was originally envisioning. I was like thinking about her kind of like on this like big gnarly looking throne that probably Hades would normally be sitting on, and she'd be like draped over it sideways, and maybe she's like leaning backwards kind of playfully, and like he like scratching him under his chin or something, like he's to the side. But when I was like looking at the pieces of wood and stuff that I had, that was just going to be really awkward and hard to pull off. And I had that gothic birch panel from Trakel that I eventually settled on, and I was like, I think it would look really cool, but they're going to have to be like standing and they're have to be upright. And then I didn't get the idea to put the pomegranate behind her until like
I was going to
very
ask you
close to
what
the
that
end.
was.
Haha. Yeah, so that's the fruit that Hades used to kind of trap her in the, like, he came up out of the underworld, snagged her, took her back. And a couple of the versions that I had read were like, there was negotiating happening between Mount Olympus and Hades, trying to get him to let Persephone go, because her mother was, just so distraught that she wasn't attending to her duties of making everything bloom and grow, and so all the plant life up above was dying, right? So they're like, hey, you keep this up, and we're not gonna have any more like no harvest, right? Like, you gotta let her go. And so I guess there was he tricked her into to eating a pomegranate before she left, because pomegranates in the story originate in the underworld. And if somebody eats food from the underworld, then they have to be there for at least a certain amount of time for the year. So he was like, haha, now you can go up there for a little while, but you're gonna have to come back. So that was the thing that kind of like trapped her. And that's why it's kind of looming. But she's got Cerberus there to take care of her, so
Is Cerberus a
that's
good boy?
interesting. In that piece, yeah, why not? Cerberus is always a good boy.
He's a good boy. Give him a treat.
I mean, I knew that pomegranates were part of the story. I didn't know the whole story behind it, but I knew that pomegranates were had played a part, played a in the story.
Yeah, now, so I mean, caveat, right? Like, I think there are about 5 billion different versions of
That is
the
true.
Greek myths, and like, I'm not like super well versed. I read a couple off of the internet, so,
And I think
and I
that's
knew I'd like I had a little bit of extant knowledge that you just pick up because our entire culture is so, just awash.
most of my knowledge of Greek mythology is from the Disney Hercules movie.
Ah.
The muses are like so underrated. I think about that a lot lately. I'm like, they might be the coolest Disney inventions. Those ladies rock.
An underrated movie.
I think that folklore in general is very interesting throughout the culture, simply because there are very many different versions of it, right? And it's just like, well, what is the truth, right? And you just gotta take it with a grain of salt. I take a lot of things with a grain of salt, because what is the quote unquote truth? I mean, is there really quote unquote truth? And
Well,
there's a lot of things that you can take
that's,
with
I
a
mean,
grain of truth.
that's part of, like you said, right? A lot of what you base your work on is from oral history. And I mean, oral history, that's one of the challenges of basing your work on things that were passed down orally, is that there's going to be, it's a game of telephone, right? It's a game of telephone played through history.
And it can be so frustrating because, yes, there's a part of you that wants to know what's the truth. But the beautiful part of it is like, oh, I can take this, I can make it my own. There's room for interpretation.
Yes.
It's wonderful.
I mean, I'm not gonna get into
Wonderful
that.
and frustrating.
Yes.
Well, back to the topic at hand. So I'm looking at your current body of work. There's definitely a theme. There's definitely a style to the work that you do. Do you find, I know you said that when you started out, you were doing a lot of lettering and things like that, but when you started actually making more detailed pieces, do you find that your style, your vision, your voice was the same then than it was now, or did it start out something different and kind of evolve to what it is now? Do you see it continuing to evolve?
Yeah. I mean, gosh, like definitely the looks of things. I mean, there's been a lot of evolution, right? I was kind of like looking back through my feed, through old photos to just remind myself of like some of the really early ones that it's like, oh yeah, I almost even forgot that I made some of those things. And then it was all very started out very naturey. When I was doing pictures, right? Just like simple planty, some bugs, some birds. And then yeah, I was putting letters on things. I know I made like plaques with like quotes from books and stuff like that. Yeah, I'm a heavy shader user these days, right? And it took a while to get there to figure out like how that worked. And I mean, like my line work wasn't great either early on. Still struggle with line work a little bit, if I'm being totally honest.
Disagree. We will be. I respectfully disagree.
Well, I've definitely, I mean, I've come a long way. Come a long way for sure. Yeah, I mean, there's the evolution of skill, there's the evolution of the actual subject matter. The first few times trying to do like a human figure, boy, it was always all in silhouette, right? I was just like, all right, we got the outline, and then we're just gonna burn it real dark in the middle, cause I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, the piece that you did, the Princess, the Tower, and the Dragon, it looks like that's kind of a silhouette, but you did a really good job with kind of using that, and it feels like maybe you weren't quite ready to commit to doing the facial features, but you've kind of did this overlay with this dragon and this tower, and it looks fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, I think at that point I would have felt, I had done some faces by that point. I don't think it wasn't a that particular one wasn't necessarily a shying away from doing that detail. It was like I have other things that I want to put like inside this figure, which is like a dragon climbing a tower, right? And so, I didn't need to have like I think I there's like a little bit of like the hint of the nostril and the lips and stuff, and there's like a little bit of hair. Like I just sort of like made it kind of light, just to sort of give almost a double exposure kind of effect, I think was kind of what I was going for there.
I love it. I think it's a great piece.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, she's a favorite for me personally.
I love watching your videos of you doing your shade work because I don't have the patience for the kind of shading that you do. I don't understand how you do it with the nib that you use. I'm like, I don't. I just don't. Like, how did you do it?
As somebody who grew up on comic books, right, and who has a huge respect for comic book illustrators, I can see a lot of the kind of the line work and the shading and that kind of, because most of what you do is just burn, right? It's not burn and painting, right? So it gives a very similar look to that kind of the when the pencilers do the initial drawing for a comic book. There's a comic book author named Frank Miller. He did the Sin City comic book and Hellboy, and like he had this kind of like two-tone, lot of shading, a lot of like negative space, and a lot of like stark contrast. And I get that from a lot of your pieces. It's got that kind of like a two-tone, like very heavy shading and line work. There's a piece that you did with looks like it's like a crack of lightning with a gentleman standing in front of it, and it definitely gives me that kind of that kind of feel.
Wow, thank you.
Pretty cool.
That's high praise.
Yeah,
Thanks.
Frank Miller's one of my favorites.
That's
So.
awesome.
I think you have a very distinctive style. It's one of the reasons I love looking at your feed and looking at your work. And it's like I said, I love looking at your videos and like watching you, like your little snippets of how you do your shading. And it's like I try to mimic the way that you do your shading. And I do that a lot with a lot of different other pyros because it's just like, well, it's a strive to be better, right? Because I don't think you should ever stop learning. And I will never think of myself as better than. I don't think I'm better than anybody. I don't think anyone is less than me. And I look at other pyros and I'm like, well, that's really cool. How do I do that? Like, I want to learn I want to learn to do that. Like, how do they do that? Because I want to learn how to do that. I want to learn how to incorporate that into what I do, right? So like I like watching the videos that people put out of how they do things. And then I'm like trying to mimic it and I'm like I've tried to do yours and I'm like I don't have the patience for it. But I think the problem is like I like burning on high heat and you like burning on low heat. I'm like I don't got the patience for it.
To a fault, really, like I'm really working on trying to not be so scared to turn the temperature up because definitely it was a I'm afraid to mess up. It's not going to show up so much if I burn real light, real low. It was like a fear thing. And so it's like, all right, just, you know, it's going to fade out so fast. Like you just get, you know, grow some confidence, girl. Just burn it.
Well, one of the reasons why, and the fact that you burn low may play into this, but one of the reasons why I wanted you for this particular episode was because you do have a very distinct style. Like, I feel like if you look at one of your pieces, it's very easy to tell that that's one of your pieces because you have a style that's very distinctive, very unique, and it doesn't just look like a carbon copy of everybody else's work. That being said, do you feel like you were inspired by other people's pyrography or other art in how you started to develop your own voice and your own style?
I bet Zona could guess who my number one. I want to burn kind of like that. It's Manissa.
Okay, so we
So,
talked a lot.
and sorry, I'm sorry. Just for any listeners who maybe you're not like super well versed in the players in the contemporary pyro world. It's Manissa Robinson. She does this incredible photorealistic. I mean, just like
Yeah,
nothing like it.
she has a like a Patreon or something, right? Doesn't she like a
Her Patreon is still alive, but she's now on Mighty Network,
Wood Burning University,
Wood
that's what
Burning
it was, yeah.
University. That's where she is now. That's her paid platform, which I am a part of. I try very hard to get on her lives.
Even if it's when we're driving back from the sushi restaurant and you're driving.
We went out to eat, and I was like, I want to be on this live. So I had it playing while we were driving, hooked up to my car. And like, I had typed in, we're driving, and I'm making Brian listen to it while we drive. And like, Manissa's like saying, oh, really? She's just like, she reads the comments, and she's like, oh. She's like, so Zora said, she's like, don't crash. And I'm like, I didn't say anything. Like, because I was literally driving, so I didn't respond, but it was pretty funny. Because I was like listening. I mean, because she does her lives once a week, whatever. It's very informative. On a serious note, like, I love being a part of her network. Outside of fangirling, because oh my god, because goals, mega goals, right? When I first started in 21, when I was at the summit with Woodburn Corner, she was goals. I mean, she still is goals, personally.
I mean, I think that's like, you know, I think every guest almost has talked about Pyro Summit and how it was like life changing. It was definitely was for me. That's like where I even discovered her. I'm like, oh my God. I didn't know you could do stuff like this. And that's when I was like, I want to get really good at that.
Exactly. Like that is she is the reason for she has been goals. She is goals for me. And like that it she is the reason why she's what I strive to be like, and I've been trying to find my own voice in terms of it. And when I do my realistic, it's finding my voice within the realistic kind of way, but still trying to find my own way into it. And I like being part of her lives because I do get to talk to her and get, advice and whatnot from her. So that's really cool. But
Manisa is lovely.
yes.
Are there other artists that inspired you?
So I'll just sort of like grab on, like if I'm scrolling or if I come across stuff. There's a graphite artist, graphite and charcoal, maybe. I'm gonna butcher her name, I think. Sylvie Madal,
What
Madal.
I'd like you to do is send me her Instagram so that I can include her in the show notes.
Sweet. So I, man, her drawings are so incredible, and it's like almost always like a female form. It's usually f viewed from the back. It's a lot of hair. She draws a lot of hair, and then just like incredible, like hands, a hand on the shoulder, and then like these lacy little like details of fabric, and just, I mean, they look like black and white photographs, but it's all drawing. If I come across a reel that she's posted, I'll just get sucked in and just stare,
Have to, right?
So graphite and charcoal, I've been drawn to a lot lately. I know I don't do a lot in the woodcut style. I play around with it a little bit, but I do, my Pinterest has been feeding me a lot of lino cut stuff, and I just to get a sense of like how you can get contrast and shadows and things like that in that way, and it's all just like with line thickness, right?
Lino cut, really, that's an interesting veer.
And like just like the wood block prints and stuff like that. So that's something that's been like, I've been trying to absorb a little bit more, get the brain to work in some different ways, like that. That's all that's coming to mind. I don't feel like that's actually like it, but that's all I can think of right now. So.
Is there anything that drew you away from your voice? Like the need to try to fit a niche, trying to appeal to a particular group, trying to follow trends? Like, is there anything that you felt that kind of pulled you away from what the artistic vision that you had for the body of work that you wanted to create?
I've never been great at like picking up on trends, and so I think I haven't even really tried chasing that, whatever those might be. This was on the list of questions that you sent me, and I was like thinking about it over the last couple of days as I was like prepping for this, and I was like, I don't, even though I have pieces that like never sold, never went anywhere. Like I have stuff from like the first couple of markets that I did and at the end of 2022, that are just like sitting around now because they never went anywhere, and they don't really fit in with like what I have now. Like they're much more craftsy, signs with words and things like that. But honestly, like even things that never went anywhere, like were a step that got me where I am now. I can't think of anything that feels like it pulled me in the wrong direction. Everything just feels like, even if it wasn't like a commercial success, it was a step forward in one way or another. It helped me learn a skill. It helped me improve hand control, temperature, line work, something. I don't think any I can't think of anything that I would say, yeah, that was the wrong direction to go in, and I shouldn't have done it.
I think that that's rare that somebody feels that, because there's such a strong drive to sell your work, right? To make, you know, like this, if this is a business that you're running, you want it to be profitable. And you make what the heart wants, and what the heart wants isn't always what the general public wants. And so, you know, like you spend all this time trying to find your people, trying to find the people, 'cause they're out there. There's somebody out there who's going to absolutely love every piece of work that every, you know, you, Zona, every artist that we've had on, every artist that's listening, there is somebody out there who's going to absolutely adore your work and is going to pay you for your work. But it's a matter of finding those people. And, you know, economies of scale dictate that you've got to try to appeal to the widest audience. And what does the widest audience want? Well, the widest audience wants whatever's trending right now. They want the popular pop culture stuff. They want your Lord of the Rings stuff. They want the Star Wars stuff. They want the stuff that's getting chunked out by laser printers, by, you know, eight different vendors at the same market that you're participating at. And so, you know, you kind of feel pressured to satisfy that group, but it ends up being at the expense of doing what you love. And I know, Zona, you've wrestled with this at times where it's like, you know, you're just so frustrated because that piece that you made that you love, that we've taken with us from market to market, hasn't found its owner yet. But then something happens like what happened this past weekend when we were at the King's Drive art walk, and you had one of your little shadow boxes that you absolutely love that we've been taking with us from market to market. All the other shadow boxes sold. This one has, we've hung this one up every time, and finally somebody came,
Magnolia.
yep, somebody came along and bought it and absolutely adored it.
I've had that happen with quite a few pieces that people have said that they liked it, but it just never went home. And there was just some pieces, where I personally loved it and just so surprised that I just never, no one took it home. It never found a home. And then, years later, someone just saw it and was just like, "Oh my God, that's it. That's my piece." And they were just dead set. They just walked in, and there was just it was just like there was it had that spotlight, like right out of a movie. And it was just like,
Amazing.
it just had that one spotlight for that one piece, and it was like, that's my piece. That piece has to come home with me. It doesn't matter how much it is. That is my piece. It needs It's coming home with me, and I love it, and that's mine. And it's like, that's fantastic. And I told people, I'm like, I am so glad that this piece is coming home. I mean, I love this piece, and I can't believe it's taking this long for it to go home. And it's a great feeling when it finally does, but it's,
You want somebody to love that piece as much as you love that piece.
yeah.
And the only way to do that is to make what you want to make. If you make what everybody else wants, it's probably going to go home with people. But if all you're doing is trying to mass produce things because you want to make as many sales as possible, it's not, you're, they're not going to be, they're not going to have your soul in it. And then that's not what you're going for, right? What you're going for is like actually creating something that's going to form a connection with the person who's buying it.
But I think that's the catch 22 though for any artist that's selling, right? It's the I know what my heart is telling me to make. I know what I want to make. And then there's the but is that what's gonna sell, right? It's the I want to make a flower portrait, right? So I'm gonna make a flower portrait because this is what this is what's calling to me today. This is what my heart is telling me to make. So I'm gonna make this bouquet. Make a bouquet. But no one wants the bouquet. They want, they want a lightning bolt or whatever, right? And that's the thing that's selling. For whatever reason, everybody wants the lightning bolt or whatever, you know? And it's like it's but they love the bouquet, but it's not, it's, you know, that's not what's selling. Whatever, whatever. And it's just like, oh well, you know, and it's heartbreaking for someone who has put, you know, you've taken the time for every flower and every detail, because you put the thought into it and you put the heart into the details and the shading, and you thought about what flowers would go together, and you put the thought into making sure that it looked right, and you know, the proportions were right, and the vase was right, and what you put it in, and the wood, and the colors, and all these little details were right, and it didn't touch anybody. It didn't touch anybody enough that they said, "This is mine. This is my heart."
But and I
You
think
know?
you have to preface that with yet.
Yeah, you're right. Yet, right? And then it's like, but then it's like, okay, but then you've got, okay, well, this didn't sell at this market, so now I have to take it home, right? And it's like, the problem though is that there are some people who are, I don't know if I want to say blessed enough that they can say, okay, I can, I'm okay with not having sold this piece or these pieces at this market, and I'm okay. I'm okay with not having made these sales at this market. I'm okay. Financially, I'm okay. There's this market coming up, and I can maybe sell at this market. But then you have some people that are like, you know, that are not as fortunate, and they're like, well, I need to make these sales. I need to make these sales because this is my bread and butter. I've got bills to pay. So I have to make what people are going to buy. And but this is not where my, this is not my, this is not where my heart is. Right? And it's just like, that's not their voice. That's not their love. That's not what their heart is calling for. But they have to bend to the masses, you know? And it's just, it's hard, especially as an artist, because they can't. It's the balance. It's the balance of make what you want versus make what they, what's mass produced, you know, what the masses are calling for, you know, and it's just like, can you hold out and make what you want, even though it may not sell today? Maybe it'll sell tomorrow. Maybe it'll sell in a couple of markets. Maybe it'll sell next year or the year after. Can you hold out? Can you afford to hold onto it? Right? Can you afford to wait? Is that possible? Right? Or do you need to make the sales that are going to carry you? And some people, sometimes it's not. Sometimes you have to make the sales. And it's just like, sometimes it's not an easy call, and it's not, sometimes it's not one or the other. Sometimes it's not an easy thing to say, well, no, I'm going to only make what I want, and that's it. I'm never, ever, ever gonna not make what the masses are calling for. Because I've spoken to some artists that are just like, no, I'm never gonna ever make that because everybody makes that. And I'm like, how are you living? Because I've got questions for you.
Right.
I've got some big questions for you if that's how you're living. I mean, kudos. Slow clap for you, because
Right.
wow, you know, and you know, I mean, I would love to only make only what my heart desires, but
You'll
I
get
don't got
there.
it like that, you know?
You'll get there eventually. But like that's what it is, right? It's about there was a trend on Instagram for a while where people would hold up the painting or a piece of artwork facing themselves, and they would turn it around and they would
Oh,
say,
that reveal?
revealing my artwork until I find my audience. And
Said nope. He was like, let's do that reveal. I said, no.
well, hold on, let me finish my
I'm
thought.
sorry.
So, I think that that's what I thought was interesting about that was that, these are people who are making what they love, but they haven't been able to connect with their audience. So this was an effort to try to find who's going to connect with their work. But I don't know how well it works, but I mean, it is a great thought. It's a great consideration to say, well, maybe I can use this platform as a way to connect my art with people who are going to love my art. Because I think that's ultimately what you want to do. Because once you find those people, then they are going to come back to you. Because now, instead of trying to find people, find the art that's going to connect with the people around you, the people around you are trying to connect with the art that you make. I think that's ultimately what the goal is, right? And then you can make what you love because you've got that audience of people who are hungry for what it is that you're making.
I mean, what would be the goal? The goal would be to find a patron. Wouldn't that be
Right?
great to find a patron? Someone that's just like, I want your art. I
Yeah.
want to buy your art. I'm gonna pay you to make
Work on it for an
this.
entire year. I'll pay your,
Could you
like they
imagine?
did in the Renaissance or whatever.
Could you imagine? Could you imagine? I will pay you to make me a piece a year.
Yeah, sounds great.
What?
Court, like, so I think of somebody like Court O'Reilly, and
Disgusting.
like,
Makes me want to throw up.
well, don't say that about her on the podcast. I know that you mean it in a good way, but
I will continue to say that because to me that's a compliment. But
okay, well,
hey.
I don't know if she would know that that's a
Well, I mean, I
compliment.
say it as a compliment and I will.
Well, she makes fabulous pyrography. I think it's another one of those pyrographers that a lot of people strive to be like. And she is somebody who will make things and put them out to her audience, and her audience will are looking to are waiting for her, anxiously waiting for her to put out her next piece. And that's the goal, right? Is to have your audience trying to find you as opposed to you trying to search out your audience.
Lining all over each other to pay $8,000 for
8,000, and that's like the low end of her
Right.
budget. I mean, she's Canadian, but that's not even the point. Okay, like her low end is 8,000 Canadian. What is that American? That's probably more like 6,000. Okay, 6,000.
I mean, price is price, right? You're going to value your work at what you feel it's worth. And I think, if she can command those prices and people are willing to pay them.
That's not what I'm getting at. My point is that I am not devaluing her work at all. That's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm saying is that she can command that price 100%. Absolutely makes me want to vomit. Makes me want to be like, all right, I'm gonna hang up my pen and I'm done. Like,
I'm just like, how did you get there? What's your secret?
for real, like for real, just like, just okay. I'm, just, dude, I'm done. I'm done. Like, if there was ever like any kind of contest or whatever, and like her, Manissa, like there's a few other Hannah Vega, North Star Pyrography is another one. Like, if they were in there, I'd be like, all right, see, I'm just gonna withdraw my name and call it a day because I know that I'm just gonna humiliate myself. But you've been trying to enter that. No. I know better.
By the time this
I know
episode,
better.
by the
I
time
know
this
better.
episode airs, we will have revealed your latest piece. And I think there are some people who would argue that your latest piece can stand alongside those other pieces.
I
Maybe
disagree.
even above some of them.
I disagree, but okay.
You haven't even seen, I don't think you've seen the completed.
They could just like really like close up, sneaks, right? Like,
Yes.
yeah.
This piece is honestly, in my opinion, one of the most finely crafted pyrography pieces up there with any of the people that we mentioned on the show today. Now, now I am a layman, right? I am just some
He's paid to
knucklehead.
say
I'm just some knucklehead. Well, no, I
that.
mean that's just my honest opinion. I
I
would
paid
tell
him to
you.
say that.
We will let the world decide whether or not this piece can stand alongside some of these other pieces. But I think it can.
By the time this particular episode airs, we will find out if
I don't even care about the jurors. I'm talking about the people listening, the people who are following you, the people in the real world.
well,
Human beings.
it is to be submitted for a juried show, so if it is selected for the gallery, then yeah, that is the
Well, you've already been selected for this gallery in the past, so.
we have, but that is, don't count chickens before they're hatched. So I'm just saying,
Zona, I have full confidence. I've seen what you can do.
Well, I did want to close with one question, which is
No, well, no, I wanted an answer to this particular question now. So one of the questions was, what was the piece that you looked at and said, this is me? That this is my work.
Skywoman.
Sky Woman. Which one was Sky Woman?
Skywoman.
Which one was Sky Woman?
Skywoman is I kind of refer to, you guys brought up the Princess, the Tower, and the Dragon. I feel like Skywoman was like her spiritual predecessor. So she is the only one that I've done that's like straight up just like from an Irish word, which is the word spervan. So it's an Irish word that describes a beautiful woman. It literally breaks down like the word spare in Irish is sky, and then van is a mutation of the word ban, which is woman. So sky woman. I like stumbled across it. I was just looking up the word sky in my Irish dictionary one day, and like my eyes just like dropped down the page, and I saw that one like right underneath, and I was like, whoa, that's rad. I fell in love with it. And that's another one that I wanted to do something with it for such a long time, but I could not figure out the visuals, for ages. So it ended up being a woman in silhouette, and she has kind of her hands like held up in front of her face, and it's like it could be like she's offering, it could be like she's receiving something from the heavens, just kind of a just a gesture. And so like within her face, like there's I think it's a waxing moon around like it's like a bust, right? It's like from the bust up, and so like where her heart would be is the sun, and then like within her arms and her hands, like you can see some storm clouds with the lightning strikes coming off of it, and then like in her fingertips there are stars, right? So it's all things that you see in the sky, and I actually that one is uses more watercolor than I do now, just because it felt like color was going to help, visually represent. Also, like I relied on it a lot more before I figured out how to portray things with better shading. I just thought it was like, there's so much symbolism like in the sky that felt like it correlated with, feminine attributes. And so I got her done, and I was just like, I think that was when like I'm like I want to make work that like speaks to a woman's soul. I think like up to that point I was just kind of doing, oh, this looks pretty. So that was I think when it clicked, like this is the kind of art I want to make.
More feminine work. You wanted to gear it more towards the feminine, more towards the feminine.
Yeah, I love the use of the elements and the just the kind of natural natural occurrences. I'm looking at the piece now. I don't think I've ever seen this one before, but it's very cool. We'll post it on the Discord.
I like the simplicity. I like the simplicity of it.
So you feel this is the piece that was the kind of the cornerstone for what has become your voice.
Yeah, 100%.
Very cool.
I like that.
What advice would you give to artists who haven't found their voice, pyrography artists or other artists? What advice would you give to them that how they can go and find what speaks to them?
I would say don't be afraid to try kind of a scattershot approach. Like, try a lot of things. Try a lot of different subject matter. Try different styles and techniques. Because that's the only way you're gonna figure out like what really lights you up. Eventually, I think with enough experimentation, you find like, ooh, oh yeah, that this is what does it for me. Like, this does something for my brain. This does something for my heart. This does something for, I think you just have to start trying things, and then you'll find what clicks.
Do
I
you feel
like
you
that.
found your voice, Anna?
I don't think I found it completely. I think I'm getting there. I think I'm still finding it.
Do you think it's something that just continually develops? Like, do you ever think that, like, you have your voice? Like, there are certain artists who clearly have their voice, right? But there's some artists that, you know, they just continue to evolve throughout the course of their career.
I think I'm gonna be that person. I think I'm gonna be that artist that will just continuously evolve. I think I'm too. I don't know if it's my ADHD. I don't know if it's just the nature of my person. I evolve. The seasons of my life in general, like I'm not the same person I was 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I'm changed. Like I'm not the same person. And I just so I think like the way I think. I can honestly say, like 20 years ago, I'm not the same person. So my voice then is absolutely different from today. My artistic thoughts are different. Like my thoughts from even like 5 years ago are different from today. So I don't know if I'd ever, quote unquote, find my voice. You know, I think it'll always evolve. I think it'll be more clearer. I think I'll find more of my hard lines as I evolve, where I think there'll be more things that I won't be willing to do, and I'll be more comfortable saying, I won't do that. And I think I'll be clearer with those as I grow as an artist. Like I won't do that market. I won't do that show. I won't do this kind of art. And I'll be more honest, and I won't try to be a people pleaser. I'll be less of a people pleaser.
I won't do any more Carcassonne coasters.
I don't know, because I've been thinking about those. I've been thinking about going back to those. But I've been thinking about this. I've been thinking about going back to where I started from, because I've been thinking about going back to basics, you know? And I've been thinking about going back to the Carcassonne coasters, but with hard lines attached to them. And not being, oh my God, I have to sell. I have to sell these because then I'm successful, right? But more like, I'm going to make these and I'm gonna set up a reasonable price, and if they sell, they sell, and if they don't, they don't, type of thing, right? And I'm not gonna just set this ridiculous price so that they don't sell and I don't have to make them, right? And I'm not gonna set this unreasonably low price so that they will sell. Do you know what I
And
mean?
then you have to make a million of them.
Right, and then I have to hate them, right? I'm going to set a reasonable price where it's reasonable. And a balance, right? I want to set a balance to my life. I think that's where I'm at with my life artistically. So yeah, I think. Have I found my voice? Maybe not artistically, but I think more in terms of like finding the hard lines. That, yes, then yeah, I think I'm finding my voice in that way.
You know, I think there's a lot to be said for not putting yourself in a box, too. Like, your voice is like, I'm eclectic.
I think it's a double-edged sword type of thing, right? Because when you do have a voice, right? When you do have a consistent style, then you know that people who have bought your artwork before, when they come back, they're gonna see what they've come to love. And you don't want them to come and see something completely different, because then
Shopping.
it's shocking, and it's gonna it's not going to sell your work, right? So if you have a consistent style and you have a consistent look, people are going to come back to you time and time again, and they're going to want to buy your things. Now, I think a good way to kind of work around that, one thing that we've been talking about, is doing collections where, a couple of times a year, we put together, several pieces that all have a cohesive style. But maybe not every collection is going to be the same, right? So there's consistency, but there's room for deviation too. I don't know.
We've been tossing around some ways to like freshen up the business without me killing myself. But there's also, I think, what I find interesting is that, like, I've changed some things, like, veered away from, like, the making things that, like, can be made with just, like, a laser burner, right? Because what we found is that at some markets, people won't want to pay,
Handmade
yeah,
prices.
handmade prices for something that they can get at from you know made at a la from a laser burner, which I mean makes sense, right?
You got to distinguish yourself.
Right.
Haley, is there anything that you want to plug while you have a captive audience?
Yeah, sure. So I mean, you can find everything at my website, Wisp and Mallet, WISPAND. MALLET.com. Links to all of my social medias there. All my events are there. I think by the time this episode releases, we'll be coming at my event
It'll be like probably mid-June, early to
June.
mid-June.
Yeah, I think it's
So,
I'll be at Bloombox Festival, downtown Indianapolis, outside of the Harrison Center. It's a really fun event where they just celebrate local art and local music. It is a good time, so I will be there.
June.
My work is always represented at Full Circle Nine Gallery, also downtown Indianapolis.
Sign up for the newsletter, please.
Yeah, I do. I have a newsletter. I've been trying really hard. I shook my fist every time I heard somebody say, "Start an email." And I'll be like, "No, nobody's gonna read the email." And so finally, as the algorithm has, tightened further and further and further, it's like, "All right, I'll start an email list." So, I like writing. So. I kind of like putting together my little newsletter.
Newsletters
So,
are fun.
I find that the newsletter can be actually kind of helpful. I think we've gotten, I think it's starting to become, it's starting, I feel like it's starting to become useful for us. Regardless of whether people actually voice it, we've gotten more subscribers. Like I get the alerts. I get the email saying that we're getting more subscribers. So,
Somebody's paying attention.
Maybe the other cool thing that's it's not coming up until August, but I was approached by a domestic violence shelter based in Valparaiso, so northwest part of the state. They saw my work at an event that I did last fall, and they were like, "We really love the way that you portray women. And so we would like you to consider donating a piece of work for, their main fundraiser, which is coming up in August. I think they call it Art with Heart." So I was taught, I was like, dude, sold, like, yes, I do absolutely want to be a part of that. And so in the back and forth, we were t talking about, some things and whether it was going to be a bespoke piece or something already existed. And actually she mentioned by name a couple of pieces, and Sky Woman was one of them, and I still had her. She hadn't sold yet. So I actually donated two pieces. So if you happen to be in the Valparaiso, or maybe you can come down from Chicago area, and you want to do something to help, women and families and other domestic violence survivors, help them get a fresh start, consider going to Art with Heart and buying some pieces from their auction because it's their number one fundraiser for
And
this year.
if you are not and you still want to donate to them, I am sure they would be more than happy to take your
Yes.
money
I'm
and
sure
put it
that
to
they
a good
would.
cause. So Haley is going to send me their information so
Yes.
that you can go to their website and donate. Or I don't know if they might even have some auctions online or something else, but whatever the case may be, we'll put that information
Yes.
in the show notes as well as up on the Instagram and the Discord so that you can find them, and that sounds like a really good cause. Okay, so if you want to find Zona and me, we're at BZFurfur. You can also find us at BZFurfur.com. You can find the show on Instagram at Pyrotoasty Talks. We also have a website, pyrotoastytalks.com. There you can stream the episodes. We also stream on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. On the website, we have a link to our Discord. Our Discord is now hosted on the spectacular Burn Club Discord. So if you are on our old Discord, make sure you go to the website. We are now posting all of our episodes and engaging with the community members over in the Burn Club. Plenty of conversation there. Feel free to join in, make suggestions for topics, guests, other things you'd like to see on the podcast going forward. We still have a lot of episodes left to record this season, so we are open to ideas. We also have t-shirts on the site, and Haley is wearing one of the t-shirts,
She is
which
repping.
delighted me
Yes,
today
we're
to
very
see
grateful and
that.
very happy. Woo-hoo!
Yeah, feel free to go to the website and pick up one, two, or more t-shirts if you want. All the proceeds from those go back to the show into the cost of producing it, keeping it free. We would also like to thank Woodburn Corner, woodburncorner.com. We'd like to thank Lucas Luan, who recorded our intro music. And of course, we want to give a shout out to our friends over at It's David and Renee. It's davidandrenee.com and at It's David and Renee. And that is gonna be it for this episode. So stay toasty.
Stay toasty.
Stay toasty.